John chapter 2, starting at verse 12. After the wedding in Cana that Royce preached to us about last week, Jesus went down to Capernaum with his mother and brothers and his disciples, and they stayed there for a few days. Well, the Passover of the Jews was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And in the temple, he found those who were selling oxen and sheep and pigeons, and the money changers sitting there. And making a whip of cords, he drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And he told those who sold the pigeons, "Take these things away. Do not make my father's house a house of trade." His disciples remembered that it was written, "Zeal for your house will consume me." So the Jews said to him, "What sign do you show us for doing these things?" Well, Jesus answered them, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. The Jews then said, "It's taken 46 years to build this temple, and you will raise it up in 3 days?" But he was speaking about the temple of his body. When, therefore, he was raised from the dead, his disciples remembered that he had said this, and they believed the scripture and the word that Jesus had spoken. Now, when they saw he was in Jerusalem at the Passover feast, many believed in his name when they saw the signs that he was doing. But Jesus, on his part, did not entrust himself to them because he knew all people and needed no one to bear witness about man, for he himself knew what was in a man. Thanks, Em. Look forward to hearing what you have to say.
This is kind of cool doing this a little bit differently. How great. Yeah. Hey, so you obviously just heard today we're talking about how Jesus cleared the temple, which is a fun little passage, and I picked it out, and then as I was preparing, I was like, why did I pick this out? But don't worry, it's going to be really good. A lot of people think it's about anger. In fact, I've had some people say to me sometimes, you know how Jesus apparently never sinned? Well, what about when he got angry in the temple? And to that, and hopefully, we would know that anger is not a sin. There is a righteousness to anger sometimes, and it can drive us to change things and do things that need changing and doing. So that's not in my talk, but I thought I would just sort of plug it in there at the start. So, question for you: what is a time or a place or a location that makes you feel kind of uncomfortable, a little bit maybe outside of your comfort zone? Not really like what you're used to, or a place or people that you're used to. Maybe you even feel a certain amount of pressure to act in a certain way, or to be a certain way, or to talk in a certain way, or whatever else. What is that place for you? I was trying to think about a place that is for me, and what I came up with was I love to go on cruises. It's the thing I love to do. I haven't been for a while, but I'm going again this year, so that'll be good. But I remember the very first time I went on a cruise, and there's different like dining options on a cruise, all right? Who's been on a cruise? Yeah, it's like, okay, we know this. There's different, I don't really eat in the buffet because that's gross and it's boring food. I like to go to the restaurants, but when I first went to the restaurants, it freaked me out a little bit because they're pretty fancy. The food's better, but it's pretty fancy, like white tablecloth fancy. And like cloth napkins instead of paper napkins, fancy, which is a little bit different for me. And everybody's dressed up, and the waiters are wearing suits, and they bring you to your table and they pull the seat out for you, and then you sit down and they put the napkin over your lap. The first time he went to put the napkin over my lap, I freaked out. Like, what are you doing? But he was just putting the napkin over my lap. And like, it's kind of like they stand there, and every time you take a sip of water out of this fancy glass, they fill it back up again. And it's kind of, when I'm there, and when I was doing this, I was like, this is a little bit different for me. This is not my usual kind of experience. I feel like I have to, you have to dress nicely even to get in, but I feel like I have to sit up a little bit straighter than normal, and I feel like I have to, talk with a little bit of a fancy accent, and I definitely can't, shove my fruit in my face. Like, if I was at home, I have to take little bites and be a lady and things like that. So, which totally by the end, I got used to it and I loved it, and now it's the best. But at the start, I really felt a little bit uncomfortable. Like, this is not my comfort zone. This is not what I'm used to. What's the etiquette? And there was like a little bit of pressure to act in a certain way. So here's my segue. I reckon a lot of people feel that way about church and about coming to church and about being around Christians, maybe you've even felt that way sometimes, like a little bit of pressure to have to act in a certain way or be a certain way or to not act in a certain way, to not say certain things or talk in a certain way and not talk about certain topics, to not be seen hanging around with certain people and maybe, depending on you where you are, to dress in a certain way. I think sometimes as Christians, there feels like there's these expectations from people about how we act and about there's this expectation that we're going to show up to church and that the way that you spend your time and that you're going to be doing quiet times, whatever that might be. There's certain pressure to have to, or a felt pressure at least, to have to have it all together. And I wonder how many of us actually feel, honestly, like church probably isn't the place to let all the stuff out and to be truly, truly you. Do you know what I think happens when we start to feel this pressure to act in a certain way as Christians? I reckon we kind of get to the point where we just start going through these motions, the motions of church, the motions of faith, without actually having much meaning behind it. I think that's what can happen. We show up to church, we listen to the sermon, we sing some songs, I put a smile on my face, and I look like I've got it all together. Repeat, 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 repeat. No wonder people get a little bit exhausted by church. No wonder it can be the last thing sometimes we feel like doing on a Sunday. We'd much rather just like relax and not have to make the effort. I wonder if you've ever felt, or even if you do feel, exhausted from trying to do the church thing. You've ever felt exhausted from keeping up an appearance, from trying to keep people happy, to not share your real thoughts, and you just kind of go through the motion of faith in order to appease the people around you, and sometimes in order to appease God. I actually think we all fall into this kind of thinking every now and again. I know I certainly do, and I know I certainly find it exhausting after a while because I'm trying to do this Christian thing and tick all of these Christian God boxes, and I'm doing it all just to kind of try and appease people or God or really just my guilty conscience, really. The problem with this is that I'm just doing it all in my own strength. It's just me. And I'm doing it in my own effort. And when it becomes like that, it kind of becomes religious. It becomes a religious thing. And when I say religious, I don't mean like a religion, like Christianity is a religion and Islam's a religion and Judaism is a religion. I don't mean like that. I mean religious as in like rules and regulations that I have to keep and I have to do over and over and over and over again. It's a religious attitude. So no wonder we feel kind of exhausted sometimes. No wonder. This story that Matt read out for us before, and the story of Jesus in the temple, and Jesus' interaction with the temple actually speaks like so much into this religious attitude that I think that we adopt sometimes. The pressure that we feel to act a certain way in order to keep God happy, to keep each other happy. We've got to keep the rules. We've got to keep up with the routine. We've got to smile on Sundays and do it all in our own strength. Jesus certainly had a lot to say about that. And last week, Royce preached a killer message about how Jesus turned water into wine. And last week's story and this week's story of Jesus actually go together really well. Like John put them together in his gospel for a reason because they both tell and they both have kind of a similar message. It's about how Jesus makes a statement about his identity, about who he is, and then Jesus replaces something old with something better. That's what these two stories are about. So let's look at the passage. So this is happening just a little while after Jesus was at that party in Cana, which is quite close to Jerusalem, but now he's moved over to Jerusalem and it's the Passover. Passover, if you don't know, is when the Jews celebrate how God saved them from the Egyptians, like years and years ago, like Moses, let my people go, all of that stuff. Years ago, it's a really big celebration for the Jews, even to this very day. But this time, when Jesus was in Jerusalem, it was the Passover. They were celebrating it. And so that is a a really big deal. It means that Jerusalem would have been absolutely buzzing because Jerusalem is like the center of Jewish life. It's their capital city. It's where it's all happening. And within the within Jerusalem, there's the temple, which is like the center of Jewish life. That's if Passover is like a festival and everyone's descending on Jerusalem for this festival, the temple is like the main stage. So it would have been absolutely buzzing. It would have been nuts. The passage tells us that there's like vendors everywhere in the temple and they're yelling and there's animals all over the place and it's kind of crazy. So for this story to make any sense though, you kind of have to understand the deal with the temple. It kind of gets raised a lot. We talk about it a lot. And like I said, it's the main stage of Jewish life. Why is that? Why is the temple the main stage? Well, Israel, the nation of Israel, or the Jews, they are God's chosen people. God called them out. He set them apart. He said, you will be my chosen nation, and I will set you apart among all of the people of the world. And that was because they had a relationship with him. There was a covenant, which means a promise between them and God, that they would have this relationship with God. And because of that, Israel were then supposed to show the whole rest of the world about God. They were supposed to like shine a light to the rest of the world and show them who God is, who Yahweh is. It didn't kind of work out that way in the end. They weren't always very good at that. But that was the intention. And you can read about all of that in the whole Old Testament. But so part of these Jews, part of Israel being the chosen people of God, this holy nation, they have a relationship with God, is that they have to meet with God. I don't know if you've ever tried to have a relationship with someone and you never communicated with them, you never talked to them, you never met with them. It's kind of hard to do. So part of the deal with Israel having this relationship with God is that they had to meet with him. They had to communicate with him, have a relationship with him. And all of that happened in the temple. So you see why the temple is so, so, so important. It's where God's presence dwelled. So you need to remember that the temple is how people have a relationship with God. That's really important to know. So on this Passover celebration, which is a really big deal, but it's also been like a really long time since the Passover happened. While a lot has happened, a lot has passed in that time since God saved them from the Egyptians. So it could be that the Passover has become a little bit, it's the Passover again. All right, well, God saved us, yada, yada, that's great. Going to make our trek to Jerusalem and go to the temple, make a sacrifice, and sweet. It's kind of almost become commonplace. And there's these motions that they go through, I guess, in celebrating how God saved them. And because this has been going on for so long now, there's some pretty switched on Jews among them. Some pretty thrifty Jews, maybe. And they realize they could probably capitalize on this situation and make a few bucks in the process. Because, you know, folks are going to come pretty far to this temple at Passover. They're going to travel a long way. They're going to have to carry these animals miles and miles. And it's going to be noisy and they're going to like smell. There's going to be poo everywhere. It's going to be horrible. So why not just save yourself the effort? We'll set up some little stalls here. You can buy an animal when you get here. All done. The problem is solved for you. Save yourself a lot of time and effort. So these guys, they started setting up these little stalls and money changing counters, and pretty much before you know it, there's a full-on market going on in the temple courts. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, if I was to go to a location, visit a place that has a lot of meaning and a lot of significance, maybe it's quite a somber place or a place to reflect on what has happened, what has occurred. If I was to find that there was kind of a exit through the gift shop situation going on in a place like that, I would think that that would diminish the significance of what's going on there, of the whole thing. Like, for instance, Ground Zero in New York City is this really like emotionally full-on place. It's a crazy place, and it's filled with these stories of of tragedy and of triumph as well. And it's a place to go and to remember and to reflect. And there's these massive memorial pools that stand right where the towers stood, the towers that fell down. And around the pools are these big black tiles, and engraved into the tiles are every single name of every single person who died on September 11. And it's really quite an overwhelming experience. So imagine in the middle of something like that, this place to reflect and to honor the what has happened, there's like a market going on, or like a gift shop situation happening. That would be really disrespectful, wouldn't it? It'd be really offensive for what it offends, what this place stands for. But here in these temple courts, this place that represents God's relationship with his people, this almighty creator, his relationship with his chosen people and his love for them, this is the very place where God's presence dwells. Literally, the only place at this point in time, because the Holy Spirit hasn't come yet, and people have put a market there so they can make it easy for people to do the God stuff, get in, get out. The temple is supposed to be the vessel of God's relationship with his people, remember? And they've turned it into something religious. They've turned it into something we just have to do. Show up, get the lamb, sacrifice it. Yeah, thanks, God. Thanks for saving us. Yep, okay, done. Let's get some food. That's like really, really offensive and quite disrespectful on a lot of levels. So when Jesus walks in and he finds that there is religion in this place that is supposed to be about relationship with God, he gets angry, like flipping over tables angry, like make a whip angry. I don't know if you've ever been make a whip angry, but it's pretty angry, I would imagine. And he drives them out of the temple courts. The fact that Jesus does this is like he's making this really big statement about who he is and why he's here. Like, no one goes to a stranger's house and gets angry about the state that it's in, do they? Like, I don't come over to your place and go, oh my gosh, it is such a mess. I am so angry. And I flip your table over and I like make a whip. No, I couldn't care less. If your house is angry, it's your house. I don't care. But if I leave you in charge of my house and I go away for a while and I come back and you've let your dodgy friends move in and there's literal like poo everywhere and then a chicken walks past my feet, like, yeah, I'm going to be pretty angry. I don't even own any chickens. This is my house and now it's personal because my house. When Jesus walks into the temple and gets angry about what he sees, he's making a statement about who he is. This is my house. And he is not happy about what his house has been turned into. Because what was meant for relationship has been turned into religion. This story, this whole story, it's all about how God was never interested in religion. He only wants relationship. That's what the temple is for, and that's why Jesus gets upset when it's not happening. The next thing Jesus says gives like the key. It's the thunder, it's the dynamite of how to do this relationship with God, the key to it. So the Jewish leaders are clearly quite put out by the events that have unfolded on this day and what Jesus has done. And without even knowing it really, they ask this golden question. They're like, excuse me, what gives you the right to do this? Prove to us that you have the authority to do this and to be here. And then Jesus answers in kind of a funny way, but it's also he like sort of just drops in this huge statement, and it's really easy to miss the significance of what he actually says here. Jesus says, destroy this temple and I will raise it up in 3 days. You kind of get the impression that the religious leaders are like, what? That's weird. And they're kind of taken aback by this comment. What does that mean? Because I actually think their response is super hilarious. I love what they say. They're like, it has taken 46 years to build this temple, and you're going to raise it in 3 days. I don't know if you guys ever saw the show World's Strictest Parents. I used to watch that show back in the day. It's when they get these like delinquent, off-the-rail teenagers, and they send them off for a week to some really strict family somewhere to whip them into shape. But I remember watching this one episode, and I loved it, and there's this 14-year-old girl and with like massive attitude but no clue, and she's at the airport about to leave to go to this strict family, and she's talking to the camera. She's like, it took me 14 years to get like this. I'm not changing now. And that's totally what this reminds me of. These guys, it took 46 years to get this temple like this. I hardly think you're going to raise it in 3 days. Bit of attitude. But as John explains, and this is the dynamite, Jesus wasn't talking about the temple. He wasn't talking about the bricks and the stones. He was talking about himself. He's saying that he is the temple, that he will be destroyed and raised in 3 days. So now not only has Jesus said that he is God and has authority over the temple, but now he's saying he is the temple. Do you remember what the temple represents? It represents relationship with God. And now Jesus is saying that's who he is. He is the vessel of relationship with God. He is the new temple. Just like how Jesus turned the water into the wine, the old into the new, he's going to do the same with the temple. The old system, the going to the temple to meet with God, the making the sacrifices, and the going through, even the going through those religious motions to get right with God. He is about to replace all of that. He's going to make it new. He will become the temple. He will supersede the temple. He will become the way to have relationship with God. Jesus is the means of relationship with God. So this story is all about how seriously God takes our relationship with him. He takes it so seriously because, number one, he hates it when we put religion where relationship is supposed to be. That's why he got angry in the temple. And number two, he so strongly desires to have relationship with us, for us to know him, that he is prepared to be destroyed and then raised again in order to be the way that we can have relationship with God. He is not interested in our religious motions, the human ways that we try to go about making ourselves acceptable to God. Jesus is bigger. Jesus is better than all of that. He has superseded religion. He has replaced religion. And he is the way that we can have relationship with God. So I guess the question is it possible? We've been talking about these guys, you know, 2,000 years ago, but is it possible that despite all that God has done to have relationship with us, that we still attempt to put religion where relationship should be? Even now, even all these years later, I wonder if we really do get this message at all. I wonder if we really have it any more figured out than those ancient temple folk. Even with all of our knowledge, all of our education, all of the Bible study resources and sermons at our fingertips that people in those days could only dream of, still, we get stuck in these religious motions. Just as the Jews went through the motions of celebrating that God saved them from Egypt, could it be that we go through motions of celebrating that Jesus saved us from our own sin? Is it possible that we honor the way that Jesus superseded religion by kind of being religious and going through our Christian motions? We show up, we put the smile on. Yeah, sweet, thanks, Jesus. And maybe I'm going to look at my Bible for 5 minutes a week to kind of keep you happy. Imagine if you died to set someone free from a cage they crawl straight back into. Jesus isn't interested in being kept happy, not by half-hearted sacrifices back in those days, and not by fake good Christian masks that we wear today. That is a religious attitude. And God hates it when we put religion where relationship is supposed to be. He didn't die for you so that you could rock up to a service for an hour and a half once a week. He died so that you can know him. Know him. He died to give you freedom in your soul and in your heart and for your whole life. He didn't sacrifice himself in your place so that you could wear a fake smile, pretend to have it together. He died for a relationship with you. So don't give him religion. I am not trying to say, however, don't hear me wrong, that all of the things that we do in our Christian lives are bad, like coming to church, like doing quiet times, like studying the Bible and praying. These are really awesome things, really important things, really great things in order to have a relationship with Jesus. That's what they're for. What I'm talking about, though, is the attitude that's in our hearts. Are we doing these things resentfully or fearfully? Or because we feel pressured to tick a box, to keep God happy, because that's religion. And that doesn't please God at all. What pleases God is when our hearts genuinely desire to know him more, to spend time with him, to be at church in order to worship him, because you've come to taste and to know how great his mercy and his grace is for you. That's what God wants for you, for your heart to be close to his heart. Jesus did not come to exhaust you with rules and religious customs and the pressure to fit into a certain religious box. Jesus actually said later in John that he came that you may have life and have it to the full, to have it abundantly. That's what Jesus came for, so that you may know freedom to live the life you were created to live. So this series is called A Big Jesus, if you hadn't noticed just yet. We're finding out how big Jesus really is, and that often our own images of Jesus, our own pictures of Jesus, are actually really small ones. And if being a Christian to you is all about being good, if it's all about ticking some boxes and keeping God appeased, then you have a very small Jesus. We were created for real, transforming relationship with the living God. And God has continuously showed us mercy after mercy, even when we didn't deserve it. So fair enough that he would get a little bit upset when we exchange his offer of relationship and life to the full for religion. So I just want to finish by asking you, what tables would Jesus flip over in your life? What things need to be driven out of your heart, maybe, or of your life? What things are you replacing a relationship with Jesus with? What's standing in that place? Maybe it's religion, like we've talked about tonight. You get a bit stuck in the motions and it stops you from actually experiencing the incredible transforming relationship that you could have with the living God. Perhaps it's something else. Busyness, I think, is a huge one. Sins that we get caught up in, an addiction we get caught in, certain people. What things are stopping Jesus from being big in your life? If you've come tonight feeling a little bit dry, maybe even a little bit distant from God, maybe a little exhausted, like we talked about at the start, exhausted by the pressure to have to be a certain way. Maybe it's because there's things in your life that are bigger than your relationship with God, that are taking your attention away from his mercy and grace and love for you. So you need to know that that exhaustion and that dryness is not what Jesus wants for you. It's not what he planned for you, and it's not what he asks from you. He came to have relationship with you. He came to fill you and not to drain you. In fact, he also said, this is in Matthew, classic, he said, come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. This isn't a God who wants our religious efforts. This is a God who simply wants you to come. Come to him, find rest in him, be filled by him. And you can bring all that you've got as well. All of the baggage, all of the things that you've got. You don't have to have it all sorted just yet. You don't have to have it all together yet. He says, just come. Come to me and I will give you rest.